Chapter 10. They all boarded on the Euro train leaving for Munich just before dawn. They were speeding east toward Austria, even if they didn't yet know exactly where they needed to go next. Right now, it was all about motion, all about getting out of Germany. They had a private compartment this time, two long bench seats with a table in the middle. Quentin leaned back in his seat with a large bag of ice over his head. His ears were still ringing from the flashbang grenades. Next to him, Kate slept with her head on Nick's shoulder. On the other side of the table sat Jake, his right ankle wrapped up tight and still visibly swollen. Professor Lewis sat next to him, poring over the next link in the map.
"I don't have this one quite figured out yet," Lewis said, "but I believe we're moving in the right direction. There's a clear reference to Austria here."
Quentin made a point of not showing any of the map pieces in public, but here in the private compartment, Lewis was free to lay all three pieces out on the table. The latest piece was similar to the others, with the strange ancient runes arranged along the topographical lines in the center, and the separate banner on the right side. This one read, "Der Eisbär dient dem Erzherzog von Österreich und dem Heiligen Römischen Kaiser."
"We've got an ice bear," Lewis said. "The Archduke of Austria and the Holy Roman Emperor. It's quite a puzzle, isn't it?"
"If there's anyone who can figure it out," Nick said, "it's you." Lewis smiled at him.
"Thank you. I'll give it my best go."
Quentin struggled to stand up, his head pounding with every slight movement.
"I need more ice," he said.
"I've got it," Nick said. He opened the compartment door and stepped out into the hallway. He made his way slowly down the side hallway of the car, passing through one more car, then into the dining car. The tables were half full of normal people leading normal lives, having breakfast on their merry way to Austria. Nick asked the server behind the bar for a bag of ice for his father. He was ready to try the request in French, then Italian if he needed to, but the server spoke enough English to get the idea. Nick grabbed the bag of ice and thanked the server. He was about to turn and leave when he felt the presence of the man next to him.
"You threw Nils from the tower," the man said.
Nick turned slowly to look at him. He had the bent nose and scar tissue of a man who'd lost at least half of his street fights. He was wearing jeans and a black leather jacket. More important to Nick, one point of a Red Star tattoo was visible over his collar. Nick looked over to see another man in one of the dining booths. This one had a shaved head and the same Red Star tattoo on his neck.
"I think Nils threw himself off the tower," Nick said.
"But where's the big guy?"
"You'll meet Franz in time," the man said. "I promise."
"Franz?
Really?
Like Hans and Franz from Saturday Night Live? We're going to pump you up."
"I don't know what you're talking about," the man said.
"You're missing out," Nick said. "I'll email you a YouTube link."
"Where are you and the others going?"
"What do you mean?" Nick asked.
"I'm alone."
"Let's try this again. You are all in one compartment, two cars ahead of us. Where are you going?"
"Oh, them," Nick said. "We're just going to Salzburg for some of their famous sausage."
The man dropped his voice down a notch.
"We could shoot you right here. You think we care about anything else?"
Nick looked at him again, then at the man in the booth. "Clearly they don't," he thought.
"Let's go,"
the man said.
"Walk."
The second man stood up and led the way through the dining car. Nick was nudged into the middle of the parade, with the first man following him. They opened the door and went into the space between cars, a sudden rush of wind blowing across Nick's face. When they were in the next car, they squeezed over to the side to let a very old woman totter by them. Another door opened, another blast of wind. Then they walked into the car containing everyone in the world who was important to Nick Fox. He still had no idea what to do. The two men walked directly to the compartment and threw open the door. Kate looked up in surprise. The professor looked up like he was about to wet his pants again. Quentin was asleep, his head leaning against the wall of the compartment. Jake was gone. The lead man looked up and down the hallway, took out his gun and pointed it at Kate.
"Where is he?"
"Bathroom," she said.
nodding her head toward the other end of the car, away from the direction in which they'd come. The first man said something to the other in German, pushed Nick into the berth, and kept his gun pointed at Kate. The second man went forward to the other end of the car to find Jake. When the second man reached the end of the car, he saw that he had to go on to the next to find the bathroom. He opened the door and went out into the rushing wind one more time. Jake was waiting for him. He put his stun gun against the man's neck and hit the button. 10,000 volts raced through the man's body in a fraction of a second and shut down his entire neuromuscular system. As the man slumped to the floor, Jake took away his gun and stuffed it into his own belt. When the man started to recover, Jake lifted him back to his feet. "Auf Wiedersehen," Jake said as he pushed him through the gap. Because it was a Eurotrain, the man probably hit the ground at 150 miles per hour, maybe more. But he had a theoretical chance of surviving. Back in the compartment, the first man's attention was momentarily drawn away from what was going on in the car ahead. He had spotted the map lying on the table and knew exactly what it was. Kate slid one hand down below the table into Nick's leather travel bag. "I'll take that," he said. "Slide it over here." Kate carefully riffled through the contents of the bag, feeling for something metal. "I said, slide it over." This time he gestured with the gun, pointing it at the map. Kate pulled out the Walther semi-automatic that Nick had carried the night before in the castle. She aimed at the man's abdomen and fired. In the same instant, Quentin opened his eyes and took the man's gun. As all of the air went out of the man, he made a low half-yell, half-gasp, sounding exactly like a man who's just been hit in the gut with a rubber plug traveling 350 feet per second. Nick caught him as he fell and pushed him back out into the hallway. The old woman was making her way back through the train. "He's having a seizure," Nick said, holding the man out of the way, long enough for the woman to pass. "I'm getting him some help, don't worry." Either she didn't understand English or she didn't care, because she just kept walking. Jake opened the door just as Nick reached the end of the car, half pushing, half carrying the man. Jake took him from Nick, looked down the hallway to make sure the woman was out of sight, and threw the man through the gap. "Say hello to your friend for me," Jake said. Before Nick could thank Jake, he glanced through the window leading to the cab ahead of them. The man named Franz, the largest man on the train, possibly the largest man in the combined nations of Germany and Austria, was pushing his way down the center aisle. In this cab, there were open double seats on either side, and a passenger was currently blocking the aisle, struggling to put a big suitcase in the overhead rack. "I don't think we're quite done," Nick said. He watched the big man push the suitcase into the rack with one hand, as easily as a normal man would stick a letter in a mailbox. He deposited the passenger into his seat just as easily. "Help me up," Jake said, nodding to the top of the car. "When he comes through, I'll hit him like a ton of bricks." Nick put his hands together to make a step. Jake winced as he went up on his sprained ankle. But with one quick lift, he was able to grab onto the top of the car and pull himself up. He got his stun gun ready again, hoping it had enough time to recharge. Nick watched as the big man fought his way to the end of the car, leaving looks of outrage and pure terror in his wake. Nick waved to him as he stepped back through the door into the car behind him. Kate poked her head out of the berth. "Is everything okay?" "Give me that gun with the plugs," Nick said. When Kate handed it to him, Nick told her to close the door to the compartment, to lock it tight, and to shoot anything bigger than a Coke machine if the door was pulled open. "Use real bullets this time," Nick said. "Keep shooting until the gun goes click." As the door closed, Nick turned just in time to see Big Franz entering the gap between the two cars. Jake dropped down from his vantage point, driving his elbow onto the big man's skull. Franz didn't flinch. Jake took the stun gun, stuck it against Franz's neck and hit the button. There was a loud crackle of electricity. Franz looked down at Jake like a man vaguely annoyed by a buzzing mosquito. Franz picked Jake up by the neck with one hand and carried Jake toward the edge of the gap. The ground was rushing below Jake's feet. Nick opened the door and fired with the gun, hitting Franz with every plug in the cartridge: abdomen, chest, neck, forehead. Each blow was enough to put a normal man on the floor for a very long time. As Franz let go, Jake was barely able to grab onto the ladder that ran up the side of the car. The wind rushed past him at 150 miles per hour, trying to blow him off the train. Inside, Nick was backing away from the door as Franz tore it open and stepped inside the car.
"Let's talk about this," Nick said. "Sprechen Sie English? Francais? Italiano?"
Franz took three more steps forward. The compartment door opened and Quentin's foot came out to trip him. Franz landed so hard it was a wonder the train didn't derail. As he was shaking his head clear and starting to push himself back up, Kate came out and wrapped her father's thin metal cable around the man's ankles, tying it into a quick knot.
"Hey, didn't I shoot you in London?" she asked.
Franz looked up at her like, "Do you really expect this to do anything other than slow me down for maybe 3 seconds?" Kate showed him the grappling hook on the other end of the cable. Franz's eyes grew wide. He scrambled to untie the cable, but Kate had already led it through the door and into the gap between the cars. Jake was just managing to climb back off the side ladder.
"You might want to step aside, Dad," Kate said.
As soon as Jake was behind her, Kate spun the grappling hook 3 times and out through the gap. They happened to be going over a bridge, spanning high above a river. The hook hit one of the bridge's tension wires and caught immediately. 1 half-second later, Franz was pulled through the door to slam violently against the other car, and 0.00001 seconds after that, he was yanked by his feet through the gap. Jake and Kate both heard the sound of a great weight hitting a hard metal beam at very high speed. As they poked their heads through the gap, they saw Franz's body dangling from the cable over the river. Franz's ankles finally worked free of the cable, and he fell at least 200 feet to the rocky riverbed below. When they went back to the compartment, Nick, Quentin, and Professor Lewis were catching their breath, especially the professor.
"This is not what I signed up for, guys," Lewis said. "I've never had a gun pointed at me before."
"You did great," Nick said. "Everybody did."
"No, I really think it might be time for me to go home," Lewis said.
Everyone else looked at each other. "It might not be that easy," Nick finally said. "They found us at your house, remember? They know you're with us." The professor thought about that one, closed his eyes, and nodded.
"Looks like my unplanned vacation is going to last a while longer."
"Which brings up an even more important question," Nick said. "How did they know we'd be on this train? We didn't even know we'd be on it ourselves until we decided this morning."
"They can't be tracking us anymore," Kate said.
"I dumped my phone in England."
"My phone's always clean," Nick said.
"And mine," Quentin said.
"Same here," Jake said.
A moment passed, and then everyone turned to Professor Lewis. Another moment passed as he noticed everyone staring at him.
"What?"
"Professor Lewis," Quentin said, measuring each word, "do you still have your own personal cell phone in your possession?" He took out his phone from his tweed jacket.
"This one?"
Jake, Nick, and Kate all let out breaths, rolling their eyes. Quentin stayed focused on Lewis.
"You brought that with you from England?"
"Yes. Is that a problem?"
"Not for long," Jake said, grabbing the phone from Lewis's hand.
"Wait," Nick said. "Don't just throw it out the window. We can use it to our advantage."
"A false flag?"
"Exactly," Nick said.
"When this train arrives in Salzburg, the phone will still be on board, but we won't be."
"The next stop is Rosenheim," Kate said.
"We get off there, but then what?"
"Then we go to Vienna," Lewis said.
Everyone looked at him again.
"When that gun was pointed at me, I think I had an inspiration and figured it out. Dem Erzherzog von Österreich und dem Heiligen Römischen Kaiser. The Archduke of Austria and the Holy Roman Emperor. For a short period of time, that was one and the same person, beginning with Francis I. When Francis was crowned as both, he lived at the Schönbrunn Palace in Vienna."
"So we go to the palace and we look for what?" Kate asked.
"Dear Ice Bear," Lewis said. "The literal translation is ice bear, but what that really means is polar bear."
"So another crazy king," Kate said, "or archduke or emperor or whatever, and another animal clue for us to find.
Is that what you're telling us?
The professor winced.
Not exactly. This time, it's a different kind of animal clue.
What do you mean? Kate asked.
The Tiergarten Schönbrunn, Lewis said. It's part of the palace, and it happens to be the oldest zoo in the world. The polar bear exhibit, in fact, is quite famous.
Wait a minute, Kate said. Are you saying what I think you're saying?
Yes, Lewis said. The next link is guarded by real-life polar bears.